the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses dying. Tis you, tis you, must go and I must bide. Da 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 da. My mother told me that she would sing this lullaby to me to help me fall asleep. And how she came to know this particular song is a bit of a mystery to me. You see, we're not Irish, not even a little bit. And the fact that she sang it to me in her Creole-accented English is a fact, a visual that is lost to my memory. Nonetheless, when I hear that song, that lullaby, Danny Boy, the pipes are calling, there is something very familiar about it. It's as though I'm returning to a warm and inviting, a beautifully decorated room in a house that I haven't visited in a long time, but it's always ready for me whenever I'm ready to return to it. Danny Boy is my song, and it seems appropriate enough in whatever language. And if only we could all have songs that are made just for us, with lyrics that call us out by name, songs that capture the hopes and aspirations of generations, songs that guide us back to wholeness, or at the very least, songs that guide us to sleep in the arms of a very young and tireless first-time mother. When I was doing research for my thesis focused on spiritual practices in seminary, I came across an entry on an African culture where everyone who is born to that culture gets two unique songs. And these songs are created at the time of their birth. The first song is known to everyone in the community, and it's sung at various points in their life. It's a way of identifying the person. The other song, that song is a secret melody, and it's one that only the individual, their parents, and maybe their spouse might know and remember, but no one else. It's a secret lullaby that's sung only at special, critical moments in their lives. Perhaps it's sung at their bedside if they're gravely ill, or it's sung during a rite of passage or an initiation. The idea here is that the special song has the ability to guide a person through the darkness, through the obscurity, and into the land of the living. This secret lullaby is there to help a person navigate the many dangerous intersections of birth and death, of any kind of change in status. And it's that same song, that secret lullaby, that shepherds a person with comfort and support through the gates of no return at their deathbed. The secret song is one's true song. And it's how this particular culture sets the stage for healing, for centering, for restoration. In our own culture, we might know of parents who have developed songs for their own children, creating mnemonic devices that helps the child remember their full name, their home address, perhaps their parents' phone numbers. The idea here is quite similar. Use this song to find your way back home. Use this song to find your way back to safety. Perhaps you've sung this song with your own children if you have them. 215-628-4371. 215-628-4371. If you could remember that, then you'll always find your way back. Our focus is on the songs that help us to return safely to ourselves, the songs that help us to center. Even now, perhaps memories are stirring up in your own mind of songs that you heard in your childhood, songs that you heard while you were a young adult, songs that help get you through. And I want you to hold on to those memories. In fact, pull them apart and find the simplest song and hold on to that one. And remember that it's always available to you in times of struggle and in times of thanksgiving. All of us in this room will experience throughout our lives moments where we are off center, dangerously out of balance. Some of us might be in a constant state of off-kilter, never quite settled in our own place, never quite settled in our own skin. Sometimes I find myself there. The frenetic pace of our lives in this Western culture creates these increasingly acute angles, thinner and thinner slices of a life that never seems to offer us enough rest, enough healing, enough agency, enough love, enough comfort. Last Sunday, Kent talked about the experience of being one who is not comfortable in their own skin, of using busyness and hyper-productivity as a way to get away from that discomfort. He encouraged us to say no and to reprioritize and to deprioritize. He encouraged us to rest. And I say that while you are resting, perhaps you might sing a lullaby to yourself. And perhaps that lullaby might be the means through which you find yourself at rest, at peace. And it's funny how our spiritual theme for the month has been busyness, but every sermon has been about not doing. So I'm going to shift that pattern and say, perhaps you'll busy yourself with singing a song of comfort and find your way back to center. The willingness to open ourselves up in song is one of the highest spiritual practices. And while we often hold very strong judgments about singing, like who should sing and who should not sing, they are always overstated and they are always wrong. Now, we might think that Beyoncé should sing, or we might think that Frank Sinatra should sing, and that maybe we should sing, but only in the shower and nowhere else. But I say nonsense, complete nonsense. Everyone should sing their hearts out. And not because they have a voice of an angel, or because they're on beat, or have the tone, or know all of the words. Everyone should sing because it brings us into close contact with the holy and with our wholeness. And lullabies offer us the best way to reconnect, to find center in an off-centered world. But how? Musicologists say that the lullaby, the song of comfort, is perhaps the oldest and most ancient form of music, and that mothers and some fathers in every culture throughout human history have sung songs to their infants. Singing soothes, in a way that is beyond words. Words cannot approach them, in fact. Sounds that are formed in music are recognized by babies, and they can decipher those sounds long before they've developed their ability to see the person who's singing it. Music, and not speech, activates parts of the human brains, very, very ancient structures that we have in common with all mammals. And more important than that, lullabies confirm and strengthen the bonds that exist between parent and child, calming the baby and calming the parent. In fact, the steady stream of pattern music stabilizes respiration, slows down the heart rate, lowers the pulse, and relaxes the muscles. This is the best part of the story. Whether or not you are a parent, singing not only calms the baby, but it calms the singer. It relaxes their muscles. It slows their heart rate. It calms the fears. It helps us to regain our center, connecting us to our deepest humanity. Now, you don't have to join the choir at the end of the service. Or the band.
But please do.
And here's why you might want to. And it comes from that 19th century Unitarian, Frances Harper, and in her poem, Songs for the People. She wrote, "Let me make a song for the people. Songs for the old and young, songs to stir like a battle cry wherever they are sung. Our world, so worn and weary, needs music pure and strong to hush the jangle and discords of sorrow, pain, and wrong. Music to soothe all its sorrows till war and crime shall cease and the hearts of men grow tender, girdle the world with peace." Our Unitarian Universalist tradition, as one of its six sources of inspiration, and I'm going to read it, draws on the words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. The words and deeds of prophetic women and men. And Frances Ellen Watkins Harper is one prophetic woman, a trailblazer, and we should be so proud to call her our own. She was an African-American Philadelphian, a writer, educator, lecturer, abolitionist. She held memberships at the African Methodist Episcopal Church and the First Unitarian Church in Center City. Perhaps she was hedging her bets. But she's still ours. And her poem, Songs for the People, was written during the height of the American Civil War. Now, I know that members of our own congregation joined with our friends at First Church to seek out her gravesite in Mount Eden Cemetery and restore the gravestone and to clear the plot of weeds. You see, Harper was forgotten for decades until she was recently reclaimed by scholars. And there's a moving story about Harper that prefigures the civil rights movement of the 20th century, and I want to share it with you. You see, Harper was riding on a Philadelphia streetcar, and she had been riding for a while. And the conductor of that car noticed that she wasn't a white woman and told her that she had to get off the streetcar immediately. And she refused. And a kindly woman in the streetcar, perhaps a friend or an ally, noticed that there was a seat in the far end of the streetcar and said perhaps she could sit in that far corner. And Harper refused and stayed where she was. And she stayed on that streetcar until she arrived at her destination. And when she prepared to get off of the streetcar, she paid her fare, or attempted to pay her fare, but it was refused. And what she wound up doing is she flung the money on the floor and stepped off. She was a Rosa Parks of her day, one of countless Rosa Parks that created this substrate, this ground from which future civil rights leaders would come out of. And to understand that story is to understand the power of her words. That despite the horrific divisions, despite the horror of the Civil War, the horror and the injustices that she experienced day to day as a woman of color living in her society, living right here in Philadelphia, the fact that she could see and experience all of that and still encourage us to sing a song is incredible, absolutely incredible. And while you may say that the Civil War, it's more than 150 years from now, it's far removed from our experience, I say that it's not. That we are still a nation that's divided. We are still a nation that is at war with itself and at war in the world. And those fights are still along racial lines, still along economic lines. Our population still lives under tremendous fear. Fear for ourselves and fear for the people that we love and care about. But despite all of this, we are still encouraged. We are still admonished to sing the songs of comfort. And it matters because we need to have those resources to help us navigate these troubled waters. The resource of a song of comfort, a lullaby in a time of distress. So I want all of us to remember that our world needs music that is pure and strong, to hush the jangle and discords of sorrow, pain, and wrong. And perhaps it's too simplistic to say that our world might be changed by the simple act of singing, and singing whatever song we choose. But I say that a revolution might begin with song, and the revolution might begin with you. So what is your lullaby? What is your true song? Each of us has at least one, maybe two. Make a practice of singing that song. And sleep. Sleep, my love, and peace attend thee all through the night. Guardian angels, God will lend thee all through the night. Soft the drowsy hours are creeping, hill and vale in slumber sleeping. I, my loving vigil keeping all through the night. May it be so, and amen.